Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is May 15th, 2015. Spring has sprung. The trees are blooming, and all is right with the world, except for Washington, the political scene, and the madness of the human species, I guess. I thank you for joining me. It's always great to catch up with all of you at the end of the week, so we can play that inevitable and sometimes disconcerting game of catch-up, and there is indeed much to catch up on, if I could get the words out. Those of you familiar with my program know that I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. Now that agency, having been disbanded and sliced and diced, is under the Department of Homeland Security, properly refer to it, the Department of Homeland Surrender. And barely a day goes by that I don't feel that indeed our nation is surrendering its sovereignty, surrendering its safety, its security, surrendering the ability of Americans to excel and live a decent life within their own country, surrendering our moral leadership. Boy, the list of what we are surrendering because of our politicians from both sides of the aisle is nothing short of astonishing. I think we really need to change the name of our political parties. The Democrats, more properly, should be called the Demoncrats, and the Republicans should be called the Repugnicans. They certainly are acting in a repugnant fashion, as do the Democrats. It's both sides of the aisle, with a few shining examples of some leaders who understand what leadership is about. But boy, oh boy, it's difficult to separate the wheat from the chaff, especially in Washington, but actually on the state and local level as well. Politicians are being politicians, to be compared with the other oldest profession. So I think we know what we're talking about here. As usual, I'm going to start out reminding you about the websites I would very much like for you to check out, visit, do some reading, do some exploring. My own personal website, michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. Also, for many years, I've been associated with a terrific bunch of folks out in Santa Barbara, California. Californians for Population Stabilization. It's a mouthful, but it's just a lot easier to go to their website, and that website is capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. For years, they have been trying to wake up their fellow Americans about the price being paid by California and, frankly, the rest of the country because of the failures of this country to secure its borders, enforce its immigration laws, and put the citizens of our country first. What a unique thought for our government. And as I always like to make the point, this isn't about left or right, but about right or wrong. We're living in troubled times, and we're going to get to some of the articles that I've been writing for them. I also very happy to write for another terrific organization, Progressives for Immigration Reform. Just punch in PFIR, Progressives for Immigration Reform. You'll come up with my articles, and we're going to talk about some of the stuff I've been doing for them lately, writing an analysis of Rand Paul, and some other materials. Very thrilled to have that opportunity. And as their name implies, they lean to the left. I don't care. I'm actually a registered Democrat. I've always voted as an independent. As I said, it's the Republicans, Repugnicans versus the Democrats. You know, in that contest, we the people don't win. And I think we're starting to get it. Also, I write for another terrific organization, the David Horowitz Freedom Center, publishes an online magazine, if you will, called Front Page Magazine. I am a columnist for them. I also have several articles appearing on the Daily Caller, The Social Contract. I'm working on an article for them, and we're going to talk a little bit about what I'm working on for them. But again, Front Page Magazine, Front Page Mag, one word, just put it into Google, or go to my website, you can see all the articles. You know, it seems as though barely a day goes by that there isn't something in the news that leads right back, like breadcrumbs, to the immigration issue and how it impacts joblessness, how it impacts the economy, how it impacts the national debt, how it impacts national security and public safety. And yet you'd be very hard-pressed to find television programs discussing it. Now, there are plenty of radio shows talking about it. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to be on with Neil Young at 8 a.m. On Sunday, I'm going to be on with Dr. Dave Janda. On Monday at 3 o'clock, I'm going to be taping a segment for the Daily Ledger on One American News Network. I'm very pleased to be on their programs. They're willing to discuss the issues in a way that the other TV networks aren't. You know, there was a time after 9/11 when I was shuttling back and forth between CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, ABC. Sam Donaldson, the legendary Sam Donaldson, interviewed me several times over at ABC. He was the guy who became famous for shouting questions to President Reagan, and Reagan would put his hand to his ear as though he couldn't hear him, and he had, by prearrangement, from what I have read, got the pilot from Marine One, the helicopter that would take him from the White House to Andrews or elsewhere. He'd have him rev the engines, so he'd cup his hand to his ear and shrug his shoulders and mouth the words, "I can't hear you." Well, he couldn't hear Sam Donaldson because of the racket that he had ordered up from Marine One, the chopper. But, you know, I was given so many opportunities shortly after 9/11 to get my perspectives, my concerns out there. And it's not just conjecture. You know, I was an agent for 30 years. I have arrested terrorists. I've testified before a bunch of congressional hearings. So everybody was willing to accept the fundamental premise that immigration failed. We had terrorists who came into our country, were able to hide themselves in plain sight. In the parlance of the 9/11 Commission, they were able to embed themselves, and then they went about their deadly attacks. They killed 3,000 people. By now, the casualty count is much higher. God only knows how many people were made ill by the contaminants. Some have died terribly of diseases they would not have contracted had they not been exposed to all the toxins when the towers came down. How many people suffered emotional distress? How many people's lives were ripped apart because they lost loved ones? They lost close friends. They lost associates. You know, when there's a death, it's funny, the term wake. I'm Jewish, so we don't use the term wake to describe the aftermath of the passing of somebody close to us. But a wake is the process by which my Christian friends and neighbors commemorate the passing of a loved one. But I always thought of a wake in a different way. You know, if you look at a boat traveling down the Hudson River or wherever you are, you see how the wake from that boat spreads out. So it's not just the boat. The wake is far bigger than the boat. And so when you look at the casualty counts, the number of people who were forever impacted and impacted horrifically by the passing, the injuries of so many thousands of people is astonishing. I mean, God only knows how many, maybe tens of thousands of people suffered on 9/11. The 9/11 attacks are still reverberating around the world, whether it's economics, whether it's politics, whether it's our expectations of privacy that are all but gone. Forget about the Fourth Amendment. You know, we're always in this little tug of war, security versus freedom. And I know Ben Franklin famously said that anyone willing to give up their freedom for security will have neither. I think it's pretty close to what Ben Franklin, a very prolific inventor, author, thinker of his day, had to say, one of the founding fathers. But I also understand, as a former agent, the need for security. And what is so astonishing is that as we've lost all of our expectations, or almost all of our expectations of privacy under the current set of circumstances, plus, of course, the whole business about the Internet and everybody looking over everybody's shoulder and people hacking into computers, the world has changed incredibly in the last 14 years. It's hard to believe we're coming up on 14 years since 9/11. But the common sense stuff, folks, the no-brainer stuff is being utterly ignored. Politicians will not utter the word 9/11 commission. And if you want to confront most of these politicians, these political nitwits, these political betrayers, whether they are with the Republican Party or the Democrat Party, ask them how their views on immigration square with the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 commission. You see, we have a problem in America. We have a few problems. An uninformed electorate, people who don't know history, people who don't know how to ask the questions, and people who are lazy. On the topic of learning the lessons of history, I want to start out right now, or I want to right now. I guess I've already started out, haven't I? But I want to read a quote to you, and it's going to be part of the article that I am writing for The Social Contract that will be published in the fall edition of their quarterly publication, because I'm going to be focusing on 9/11 Commission findings, on the terror attacks, and on immigration, because we're looking back for that issue, a retrospective of what we found on 9/11 and where we are today, and how does all of that fit together. So in doing some of my research, and I'm in the midst of writing what should be a significant article, I was told by my friend Wayne over at The Social Contract, the editor, that I will be writing the lead story, which is very exciting for me. I like to use quotes. I like to spice things up a little bit. So in my research, I came up with a quote that is just so apt today as it was back when it was spoken. But before I tell you when it was said or who said it or under what circumstances, let me just read this to you and give this some thought. When the situation was manageable, it was neglected. And now that it is thoroughly out of hand, we apply too late the remedies which then might have effected a cure. There is nothing new in the story. It is as old as the Sibylline books. It falls into that long, dismal catalog of the fruitlessness of experience and the confirmed unteachability of mankind. Want of foresight, unwillingness to act when action would be simple and effective, lack of clear thinking, confusion of counsel until the emergency comes, until self-preservation strikes its jarring gong. These are the features which constitute the endless repetition of history. The man who said it was Sir Winston Churchill. He said it in May of 1935 as the clouds of the storm known as World War II were beginning to gather on the horizon. Think of how what he said then applies today. We are intentionally blind because the folks that are making too much money don't seem to have a grip on reality because greed is blinding them. It's like crawling out from under the rock that these bottom feeders dwell in. And, you know, I don't care if they're worth a billion or 10 billion or 50 billion. In my world, anybody who doesn't care about his fellow man, anybody who doesn't care about his country, anybody who has no moral rudder is a bottom feeder. You know, he may be a well-dressed bottom feeder or she, may eat great food, may live in an opulent house, but in my universe, folks, they are bottom feeders because they munch on the ruins that they create. They are, in my judgment, among the lowest form of life imaginable because decent people have compassion. Decent people can see beyond tomorrow. Decent people can see more than what they want to shove in their stomach or the money or whatever it is they want to shove in their safes and their bank accounts. When that's all you're capable of doing, you are a bottom feeder. There is nothing uplifting about these people. Truly, there isn't. But they're so motivated by greed that all they could think of is domination so they can get more for me, more for me, more for me. It's like that little spoiled brat sitting in the chair, you know, trying to take all the food, dump it on his own plate, can't eat it all, but boy, he's got it all. Bottom feeder. That's how I come to regard them. There's nothing moral, decent, or worth emulating in what they've accomplished, because what they've accomplished is to create misery and vulnerabilities for themselves, long run, and for us. You know, we're all part of the same ecosystem, whether we want to talk politically, biologically, socially, economically. We're all interconnected. Nobody is above the fray. If you kill the plankton in the ocean, you think, oh, little one-celled critters, who cares? They're insignificant. You can barely see them. They're tiny. Plankton? Huh, big deal. Let me tell you what. If you kill off the plankton, eventually the whales will die of starvation because we are all interconnected. I don't care how big those whales are. They're just as mortal and they too can face demise if the ecosystem that supports them fails. America is failing. We have fake numbers to make things look far better than they are. You know, when I listen to this nonsense about the unemployment numbers and the way that they spin it, oh, unemployment is down to 5.4%. Boy, am I relieved now because things have never been better. Let's go out and party. Let's pop open the champagne. They're ignoring 93 million Americans of working age who are not involved in the labor force. So what in the world does 5.4% mean? This is like a doctor coming out to see the family of a loved one who's very, very ill, and the doctor says, I've got great news. Your relative has no fever. Yeah, the relative is dead and his body temperature is equal to room temperature. So it's certainly not a lie that he has no fever. He also has no life. That is as meaningful as the unemployment numbers are. These are ridiculous statistics. And, you know, 20 years ago, if you would have heard this foolishness being spewed by a government, you would have attributed it to the old Soviet Union, their two news agencies, Pravda and Izvestia. So here we are today being told everything is cool. We have an economic recovery. The stock market is climbing. We've never had more Americans on food stamps. We've never had more Americans losing their homes to foreclosure. We've never had more American children living below the poverty line. But don't worry, everything is just dandy because the stock market is soaring. This is delusional nonsense that's disconnected from reality. Just like we're being told by the talking heads on TV. Wow, if only we could get the two parties together and give us comprehensive immigration reform, everything would be fabulous. The economy would soar like a rocket headed for the stratosphere. Hillary Clinton was interviewed May 5th of this year. She tells ABC News, or ABC News reported on her saying that unlike the Republicans, she's not content to just give illegal aliens permission to work. They need to be full participants in America, and she will do whatever it takes, even if it means more executive actions than Obama, to give these people United States citizenship. Well, what I'd like to know is why doesn't Hillary just be done with it and simply declare anybody born on the planet Earth to be a United States citizen? The United States admits more lawful immigrants each and every year than the rest of the world, more than the rest of the world combined. We admit approximately 1 million lawful immigrants every year. We naturalize hundreds of thousands of new citizens every year. That's not enough for Hillary. This is lunacy. We are not actually scrutinizing the applications. So there's a real problem here. And the problem comes back to what I said when I started out. If you look at what the 9/11 Commission had to say, suddenly you realize that the immigration system is the critical element of national security that not only is being ignored, but it's as though these politicians took the 9/11 Commission, looked at the report, which in a manner of speaking is a history book, isn't it? Because the 9/11 Commission sat down, they interviewed hundreds of people, if not more. I was one of the people that was interviewed. I provided testimony to them, advice to them. They reviewed documents. They did really an exhaustive job over a period of, I believe it was 14 months, to try to find out exactly what happened, where the vulnerabilities were, where things could be improved, what we need to do to address the issue, and so forth. It was done the same way that when there's a plane crash or a train crash. Think of the terrible incident involving Amtrak on the New York to Washington run. And ironically, I'm so fortunate that I was on that train just a couple of weeks ago when I spoke at an event in Washington for Allen L. Fried Associates, a speakers bureau in D.C. I've been thrilled to work with for, over a decade now. So, you know, there's a crash, and in comes the NTSB. And the first thing that the NTSB officials said when they stepped up to the microphones, when they called that news conference, we're here to find out exactly what went wrong to make certain that it doesn't happen again. They do the same thing at plane crashes. They do the same thing when a boat goes down. They did the same thing when Space Shuttle Challenger blew up. They did the same thing when Space Shuttle Columbia disintegrated in the skies over the United States. You do these investigations to find out what went wrong and make the changes to address the vulnerabilities and the flaws in the system. But when you listen to the nonsense, the utter BS being spewed by the politicians from both sides of the aisle, it's as though they took that 9/11 Commission report, and if the Commission said turn left, they want to turn right. If the Commission said go up, they're going down. If the Commission said slow down, they want to speed up. It's exact opposite. Exact. I mean, it could not be more opposite if they sat there with a protractor and worked the angles. It's lunacy. They are tempting fate. They're putting American lives on the line. They're putting national security on the line. And if you ask them about the 9/11 Commission report, as I have with some of these knuckleheads, they turn bright red. I was standing in front of one particular chairman of a very powerful committee in Washington last year, and when I asked him about the 9/11 Commission, his answer was, the American people don't have the stomach to deport 11 million. And first of all, it's remarkable that 11 million figure has stayed 11 million for how many years now? The aliens keep on coming. They're running the border. They're overstaying visas. They're coming through the northern border, the southern border, stowing away on ships, landing at every international airport, but the number doesn't go up. I mean, it's just astonishing, isn't it? So we have a situation where the number stays the same. And I asked about the 9/11 Commission report, and the answer I got was a different answer. You know, when I used to interrogate the bad guys, and I've spent half my career with the Drug Task Force, I've arrested murderers, rapists, child molesters, robbers, gun runners, terrorists, you name the trash, I've put handcuffs on them. And the answer you would get would be the same thing. You would say to one of these nitwits, listen, where were you on Sunday? Well, last Wednesday I was with my... No, this last Sunday. Well, I'm telling you, on Wednesday, and you'd look at the guy and you knew what he was doing. He was hoping that if he started to give you some real protracted, intricate answer that didn't cover the question you were asking him, he would bamboozle you into forgetting what you had really asked in the first place. Of course, it didn't work. I had a standard follow-up. I'd say, listen, you need to answer the question I asked you, not the one you hoped I would ask you. And I wanted to say that to this politician. So I stopped and I said, listen, nobody interviewed me, by the way, and I am an American, but that's not what I'm asking you. I'm asking you why the 9/11 Commission report isn't the starting point for any discussion on immigration. And again, I got some bizarre answer about what the American people would or would not have a stomach for. And I said, do you think the American people have a stomach for another terrorist attack? Do you think the American people have the stomach to watch more young people throwing themselves off a building? Airplanes being used as cruise missiles turning into fireballs with innocent men, women, and children on board? Do you think the American people have the stomach for that? Do you think the American people have the stomach to watch their wages go down the hopper because you're flooding the labor market with more and more foreign labor? Do you think the American people have the stomach to see their friends, neighbors, and family members lose their homes to foreclosure, even if they don't? And this guy's ears were glowing so beet red, I can tell you, I was basking in the warmth of his ears. And this was, you know, at the end of the winter, but it was still kind of chilly. I thought, wow, this is better than a space heater. I could use this guy's ears. And as our discussion progressed, he got more and more frustrated, more and more unwilling to really give me straight answers to what I thought were fundamental questions. At one point, I thought that his ears were going to pop off the side of his head and fly away like two little butterflies. This is not what leadership is about. We don't elect Congress to betray us, to destroy our futures and the future of our children and our grandchildren. And that's what's happening with immigration. Not because I'm xenophobic, folks. My mother was an immigrant. My dad's parents were immigrant. My first wife passed away 29 years ago this month. Her family came here from Poland. They were in the Holocaust, her mom and dad. Certainly, I relate to immigrants. I have no problem with immigrants. As an immigration agent, I was thrilled to admit immigrants into the United States. My first 4 years was spent at Kennedy International Airport as an inspector. And I admitted refugees, which was something that gave me great joy, because back then the program had integrity, which it doesn't today, and gives me now great consternation. It was a wonderful experience. But this isn't about a legal immigration system that makes sense, that screens out criminals and terrorists and spies and human rights violators and people who are going to compete unfairly for jobs. We have a free-for-all. So even while we run a legal immigration system that we spend an awful lot of money on, billions of dollars a year, the politicians, including those who would be president, are saying, hey, it's okay to avoid that whole legal process. Just come on down. Come on down. It's like The Price is Right. Remember The Price is Right? Come on down. Why bother coming through the legal channel when you're likely to be treated better by coming illegally? Legal aliens have to pay for lawyers. Illegal aliens apparently don't. The Dreamers were getting free legal care. Try that as an American citizen. Try to get free accountants to help you when you file your tax return. So to hear Hillary Clinton turn around and say, oh, Obama didn't go far enough. What in the world is she talking about? And when the Republicans tell you, oh, we're holding the line, we're not going to give those folks citizenship. Well, that's obvious. They don't want them voting, even though I'm sure lots of illegal aliens voted. In fact, one of my friends in immigration before I retired was working on a case involving illegal aliens voting, and he was told to shut down the investigation. And this was when George Bush was in the White House, by the way, George W. But to the American who loses his or her job to somebody who's competing unfairly because they're here in violation of law, or because the system doesn't work any longer to protect American jobs, which is one of the major reasons for our immigration laws, and was certainly that way before the Second World War. In fact, labor used to run immigration. To lose their jobs to these folks is not pleasing them one bit. But that's what's happening. To lose their lives or their loved ones' lives to people who shouldn't be here, I don't think that's in America's or Americans' best interest. You're not antisocial if when someone knocks on the door, you ask who's there before you open the door. That's not antisocial. That's showing common sense. But today, in this vitriolic, nasty, vituperative environment, I mean, look at Harry Reid, that despicable individual, who had the chutzpah to stand on the floor of the United States Senate and throw, metaphorically, bricks at Mitt Romney, besmirch his reputation. Oh, he didn't pay taxes. Turns out he did. And when they confront Reid afterwards, he shrugs his shoulders, and I forget the exact words, but the idea was, well, who won, or Romney didn't win, or you get the idea. I got the result I wanted, so what if I lied? Because by standing on the floor of the Senate, of course, he's immune from prosecution For libel. Doesn't matter how you play the game, it's whether you win or lose, turning that whole old motto on its ear. Because when I was a kid, we were taught it's not whether you win or lose, but how you play. Now, how you play has nothing to do with anything. Just don't get caught. Just don't get caught. You know? And that's very disturbing to me. Because if it's only about winning and not about the process, then we're operating like a bunch of mobsters, like a bunch of gangsters. And I guess nobody could blame us for doing that, because that's how the politicians conduct themselves. They take money and they deliver, because if they don't deliver, they don't get the money. If I did that with a badge in my pocket, it would be called bribery, and I'd go away for a very long time, and I probably would lose my pension. But when you're a politician, it's just another day in Washington. And obviously they built Capitol Hill in the right place. It's built on landfill. So understand exactly what we're talking about. Look, let me start out. This is the preface. This is how the preface of the 9/11 Commission staff report starts out. It is perhaps obvious to state that terrorists cannot plan and carry out attacks in the United States if they are unable to enter the country. Yet prior to September 11, while there were efforts to enhance border security, no agency of the U.S. government thought of border security as a tool in the counterterrorism arsenal. Indeed, even after 19 hijackers demonstrated the relative ease of obtaining a U.S. visa and gaining admission into the United States, border security still is not considered a cornerstone of national security policy. We believe, for reasons that we discuss in the following pages, that it must be made one. And so they were so clear about this. They were so clear about this. And then they talk about this whole business about smugglers. This is on page 61. Now listen to this. In July 2001, the CIA warned of a possible link between human smugglers and terrorist groups, including Hamas, Hezbollah, and Egyptian Islamic Jihad. Indeed, there is evidence to suggest that since 1999, human smugglers have facilitated the travel of terrorists associated with more than a dozen extremist groups. With their global reach and connections to fraudulent document vendors and corrupt government officials, human smugglers clearly have the credentials necessary to aid terrorist travel. Now, this is very remarkable because Sheila Jackson Lee, who called me to testify about two of the dead terrorists getting an authorization to attend flight school 6 months after 9/11, Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, and I testified at that hearing, and it's worth going to my website, michaelcutler.net, or capsweb.org, or Front Page Magazine, or Progressive, all those websites, because I always, when possible, include a link so you can go back and actually watch the hearing, and you should. You should listen to the promises that were made. You should listen to the righteous indignation, self-righteous indignation of our politicians. This must never again be allowed to happen. If they come illegally, we throw them out, and on and on and on. Not one of the promises, not one of the deadlines have been met, and we're coming up on the 14th anniversary of 9/11. It was lie after lie after lie. It seems as though when you watch congressional hearings, 90% of the time you need to put hip boots on because you're going to be up to your navel in you know what, excrement. The words aren't worth anything. They aren't worth, it's just words. They spew, you know? And when Jackson Lee invited me to tell, well, actually what happened was I heard there was going to be a follow-up hearing a couple of years later on alien smuggling, and I said to Jackson Lee and to the people working for, you need to look at the issue of immigration fraud and visa fraud because that is also a means of getting people into the United States. It's not just running the Mexican border. And we had a big argument. And I finally wrote a memo to Jackson Lee, and what I wrote in my memo was that an effectively managed visa program in essence pushes America's borders out to the embassies and consulates where the visas are issued. Well, I convinced her. I prevailed upon her. And they called me as the Democrat witness. Usually I'm called as a Republican. This was the second time I got called by the Democratic Party. I've been called by both parties. See, this isn't left or right, folks. And what was remarkable was that the title of the hearing was altered, and they included the phrase pushing out America's borders. And I cannot tell you how many times in the years since then that when there are hearings about the visa process, they almost always include that phrase, pushing out America's borders. So now here you have in the 9/11 Commission staff report that statement about the fraud document vendors and corrupt government officials. And if you're talking about fraud document vendors, then we're not talking about running the Mexican border. We're talking about coming in through ports of entry. And in fact, they make that point. And they make that point so clearly that you'd be amazed. They talked about the failures of the inspectors that weren't given the adequate information to screen for terrorists. They were so clear on all of these issues. So, in fact, let me read something. Hang on to your hats. You're going to like this one, or maybe you won't. But this, again, comes from the 9/11 Commission report. Although there is evidence that some land and sea border entries of terrorists without inspection occurred, these conspirators mainly subverted the legal entry system by entering at airports. I want you to think of Rand Paul and all the others. Hillary, forget about Hillary. She's so far off the radar scope, it's almost worthless to talk about anything she says about immigration except to say she's 1,000% wrong. I mean, that would kind of sum things up. She's just wrong, period. She hasn't gotten anything right, with one exception. I'll get to that exception after I read this quote. So again, let me go back. Although there is evidence that some land and sea border entries of terrorists without inspection occurred, These conspirators mainly subverted the legal entry system by entering at airports, and in so doing, they relied on a wide variety of fraudulent documents, on aliases, and on government corruption. Because terrorist operations were not suicide missions in the early to mid-1990s, once in the United States, terrorists and their supporters tried to get legal immigration status that would permit them to remain here primarily by committing serial or repeated immigration fraud, by claiming political asylum, and by marrying Americans. Many of these tactics would remain largely unchanged and undetected throughout the 1990s and up to the 9/11 attack. Now listen to this. Thus, abuse of the immigration system and a lack of interior immigration enforcement. When was the last time you heard about interior enforcement of our immigration laws, folks? Thus, abuse of the immigration system and a lack of interior immigration enforcement were unwittingly working together to support terrorist activities. It would remain largely unknown since no agency of the United States government analyzed terrorist travel patterns until after 9/11. This lack of attention meant that critical opportunities to disrupt terrorist travel and therefore deadly terrorist operations were missed. Could there be any more clarity? And so they go beyond that. Before 9/11, no agency of the U.S. government systematically analyzed terrorist travel strategies. Had they done so, and this is in the actual 9/11 Commission Report, Chapter 12. Before 9/11, no agency of the U.S. government systematically analyzed terrorist travel strategies. Had they done so, they could have discovered the ways in which the terrorist predecessors to Al-Qaeda had been systematically but detectably exploiting weaknesses in our border security since the early 1990s. Remember the 93 terror attacks. 93, that we had the attack at the CIA headquarters by Kanti, a Pakistani national, who applied for asylum in the United States, and then shot up the CIA, January 93, killed two CIA officers, wounded three others, and 1 month later, first attack at the Trade Center. These were all Middle Eastern men who came to the United States mostly through the inspections process, okay? Then this goes on and says, we found that as many as 15 of the 19 hijackers were potentially vulnerable to interception by border authorities. Analyzing their characteristic travel documents and travel patterns could have allowed authorities to intercept 4 to 15 hijackers, and more effective use of information available in U.S. government databases could have identified up to 3 hijackers. Looking back, we can also see that the routine operations of our immigration laws, that is, aspects of those laws not specifically aimed at protecting against terrorism, inevitably shaped Al-Qaeda's planning and opportunities. Because they were deemed not to be bona fide tourists or students, as they claimed, 5 conspirators that we know of tried to get visas and failed, and 1 was denied entry by an inspector. We also found that had the immigration system set a higher bar for determining whether individuals are or what they claim to be and ensuring routine consequences for violations, again, folks, that means interior enforcement, it could potentially have excluded, removed, or come into further contact with several hijackers who did not appear to meet the terms for admitting short-term visitors. Our investigation showed that 2 systemic weaknesses came together in our border system's inability to contribute to an effective defense against the 9/11 attacks, a lack of a well-developed counterterrorism measures as part of border security, and an immigration system not able to deliver on its basic commitments, much less support counterterrorism. These weaknesses have been reduced but are far from being overcome. Well, they were reduced, but let me tell you, they are worse today, way worse today, incredibly exponentially worse today than they were on September the 10th, 2001, because of the DACA, the Deferred Action Program, because of the unwillingness of this administration to enforce the immigration laws from within the interior. And when you broadcast that, if you don't think terrorists aren't paying attention, you're out of your bleeping mind. Because they're listening to what they're hearing from Hillary, they are listening to what Rand Paul is saying, they are listening to what John Boehner is saying, they are listening to each and every one of those candidates, and they're looking at what is happening, and they now know that they can come here with impunity and not worry. And I don't doubt for a heartbeat that they are here. So when we're told immigration has nothing to do with this, look out. And then today, We were awakened to the news. And let me read this to you. This just happened this morning, or yesterday perhaps. No, this is actually this morning. That's correct. CNN reports, terror arrest in Texas shows new stance after Garland. And I'm reading from CNN now. The FBI on Thursday arrested an Iraqi-born American citizen in Texas, alleging he traveled to Syria to fight with ISIS terrorists and returned to the United States. The case against Bilal Abood is one indication of federal counterterrorism officials' new stance on terrorism cases in light of the recent foiled terror attack in Garland, Texas, against the Muhammad Cartoon Contest event. Prosecutors charged Abood with lying to the FBI, but the case represents much more. Abood is one of hundreds of people the FBI is monitoring in some way, many of whom investigators suspect could be motivated to carry out attacks, but though the evidence remains difficult to assemble. Abood, who formerly worked as an interpreter for the United States Army in Iraq, migrated to the United States in 2009. The FBI alleges that agents stopped Abood as he tried to travel in 2013 when he claimed he was planning to visit his family in Iraq. He later told the FBI in an interview in 2013 that he actually was planning to travel to Syria to fight with the Free Syrian Army, a rebel faction fighting the Assad regime that in the past enjoyed some U.S. support. Abood later left the U.S. for Turkey via Mexico, the FBI alleges. So instead of coming across the border to the United States from Mexico, he used the Mexican border as a way of getting out of the United States covertly. And this guy was an interpreter for the U.S. Army. Now, I want you to understand just how important that interpreter is in the scheme of things. I worked with many interpreters in my 30-year career as an agent. The interpreter acted as my eyes, ears, and mouth. They review documents. They know who the informants are. They know who is targeted for investigation. And they might well tell you wrong answers. You know, you're interviewing a guy and the guy is giving up some critical information. And if you have an interpreter who's really a double agent, if you will, working for the opposition, you're not getting the answers that you think you're getting. He might not even be asking the questions that you think that you're asking. But certainly he's not going to give you the answers that give up information that will be helpful to us and harmful to our enemies if the guy is working for our enemies. His job is to disinform. And this isn't the first case. We've had a number. There was a guy by the name of Alouche who did the same exact thing. He had been part of the leadership in Hezbollah, and he was in jail, I believe, in Israel. And if I remember the case correctly, and I don't have the file in front of me, I don't have the material in front of me, but I believe he was involved in the death of an Israeli soldier. But this guy was a translator. And it turned out that he lied on his application when he applied for United States citizenship. We just had a case recently in Ohio where the FBI charged similarly a guy from Somalia with the same sort of business, lying about where he was going. And this guy became a naturalized United States citizen, and he acquired his citizenship as part of the plan to get a U.S. passport to facilitate his travel to the Middle East. Time after time after time after time after time. And we now have hundreds of thousands of aliens in this country who came from the Middle East, whether they got political asylum, whether they came as students. We don't know who they are. We're not properly vetting them. And we are moving whole communities from countries where terrorism is a huge issue, whether it's Somalia. We're now about to admit a bunch of people from Syria. And look, I feel very strongly about the need to protect people who are at risk. You know, I think of the Holocaust, and I'm furious that nothing was really done to protect people who were at risk. But it's remarkable to me that while we talk about helping bring in Muslim refugees, what are we doing to stop the beheading of Christians? And I'm sure that if there were any Jews in that area, they'd be just as quick to face a beheading. So why is it that Jews and Christians are being slaughtered in the Middle East? We're bringing in refugees without properly screening them. How does this meet the needs of the United States or the values that we hold near and dear to us? What lunacy are we actually witnessing here? Go back to what it was that was said by Winston Churchill. Or as George Bernard Shaw basically said, If there's one lesson history teaches us, it's that we don't learn from history. Probably getting it slightly sideways, but that was the George Bernard Shaw quote about history. So we know that we're at risk. We know how the 9/11 terrorists operated. And even if only a small percentage, a fraction of a percent of the millions of illegal aliens who are here mean us harm, think of what just happened today when Jokhar Tsarnaev was just sentenced to death for his role in the Boston Marathon. Hundreds of people injured, four people dead. He and his brother carried this massive plan out. Their master plan was to do even more damage. Two people. 19 people, 9/11. Attack at the CIA, one guy. Attack at the Trade Center in 93, a handful of people. These attacks don't require an army. That's why they call this asymmetrical warfare. It's about one or two people. I believe there were four people who attacked the mall in Kenya and killed hundreds of people over a period of days. We need to err on the side of caution. And I want to know why our politicians don't get it. I want to understand how some of these thugs are getting into our country when you had the politicians standing before the microphones right after 9/11. Remember those images? Thumping the microphone, thumping the podium. Why didn't they connect the dots? Well, folks, God forbid, if there's another massive attack in the United States, and the odds are unfortunately very good that there will be at some point, they won't be able to hide behind this BS, oh, they didn't connect the dots. No, we have been connecting the dots and reconnecting the dots and connecting them again and again and again, and they choose to ignore it because it's hard to hear when you have money stuffed in your goddamn ears. They have been bought off by campaign contributions. It's all about the money. Follow the money. You know, it's remarkable. If you get caught speeding by a police officer and attach a $50 bill to your driver's license, there's a very good chance you're going to wind up in handcuffs. And if the cop takes the money, there's a very good chance he will wind up in handcuffs if Internal Affairs finds out. But if you go to the mayor of that town and say, hey, I want that 50-mile-an-hour speed limit to be 70, you grease that guy's palm, and I guarantee you, you'll get that speed limit increased. See, it's not a matter of whether you can buy the politicians. It's just a matter of what the price is. I remember a story, and I don't know whether it was apocryphal or not. I think it was an actual story of Zsa Zsa Gabor, one of the Gabor sisters, going on the Tonight Show with the late, great Johnny Carson. And Johnny said, you know, would you sleep with a man for $1 million? And she said, well, darling, for $1 million, it would depend on the man. He said, how about $5 million? And she says, well, for $5 million, I could probably sleep with just about anybody. He said, how about for $10? And she said, what do you think I am? And he said, well, we've already established that. Now we're just dickering over price. You see, when politicians take that bribe money known as a contribution, with the understanding that they're going to vote one way or the other on a critical piece of legislation, they are demonstrating corruption. They are demonstrating corruption, and the guy making that payment is getting the best government money can buy. But we are losing our national security. And this is a serious matter because we are at war. Make no mistake about it. There are people out there tonight looking for that opportunity, waiting for the tap on the shoulder, the phone call, the email, some communication telling them that tomorrow is the day. Tomorrow is the day. And you look at the way we conduct business. I'm going to be on One American News Network on Monday. At least I'm scheduled to be. You know, TV, it's always subject to changes in scheduling. But I wrote an article because I went down to Montana with a good friend of mine and somebody I'm so proud to be able to call a friend. I've actually interviewed him on this program several times, Paul Vallely, retired Major General of the United States Army. And Paul Vallely invited me to go to Montana and give a speech. And in fact, if you become aware of any opportunities for speaking events, please let me know because I'd be delighted to do it. What happened was I was on the airplane, and lo and behold, I was reading the booklet that's in the seat pocket in the seat in front of you. And it was all about, when I got to the immigration part, because I always like to flip through to the back and see if they've changed regulations and so forth. You know, you sit there bored out of your mind as you're waiting for the flight to get you where you're going. One of the most amazing things was I flipped to this magazine page to where they have the information about immigration and procedures and so forth. And I was absolutely astonished because what the thing showed was that now you can go through a booth if you're a alien coming under the visa waiver program. You can go to a kiosk. I kid you not. It looks like an ATM machine or like the kind of machine that dispenses the tickets at the airport. We've all seen those kiosks. And what you can do is you can actually go to the kiosk and not be inspected by a human being. Not be inspected by a human being. I want you to think about how crazy that is. So now we're talking about people coming into the United States and they're not even facing a human inspector. What they are facing is a machine. And I wrote an article for Front Page Magazine on May 12th and I called it U.S. Welcomes Millions of Aliens Sight Unseen. And the subtitle, Replacing the In-Person Inspections Process with a Kiosk. And this blew me away. And all that you have to do if you're coming under the visa waiver program is you had to have been admitted into the United States at some point since 2008. And now, lo and behold, you can just walk right into that kiosk, and eventually I guess somebody from ICE, you know, or rather CBP, Customs and Border Protection, will probably look at your suitcase and ask you if you have cabbage or meat or God knows what, you know, plant agriculture. Did you bring any purchases back with you and so forth, you know? And so they're worried about collecting the duty. That's important. We have to get that money, you know. But the opportunity to review the passport, to make certain that this guy didn't travel to the Middle East, or maybe he did, or look for travel patterns, or look the guy in the eye and notice his Adam's apple bobbing up and down because he's nervous as you question him, which I've seen more times than I can imagine or that you could imagine. So we've now taken human beings out of the loop, and now what we're saying is, oh, no, you just go in there and you can zip right on through. And these kiosks are being purchased, believe it or not, and this is a new business now, own a kiosk. There's ads for this, a turnkey operation. I guess they rent them out to the port authority of the various airports around the country. And when I started to go around the country, Chicago and, you know, Dallas, Texas, and I think New York City now has it, all of the advertisements about this process focused on only one thing. You know what the one thing was? How quickly we can get you out of the airport. Come to our airport. We have a kiosk. We'll zip you right out of here. Zip. So we're concerned now about terrorists in Europe because we know that Al-Qaeda, ISIS have been recruiting Europeans. They believe that that guy that did the beheadings was from England because they know that the Brits can travel to the United States without a visa. And in fact, that goes back to another point. On 9/11, there were 26 visa waiver countries. Now there are 38. There should be no visa waiver countries given the world situation with terrorism and ISIS recruiting. But we've gone to 38 because the United States Chamber of Commerce, partnering with the hotel, hospitality, and travel industries, have gotten what they want. And what they want basically is a borderless United States of America. And of course, Disney is right in step with that. They just fired a bunch of their IT professionals to bring in people from India. You just had Edison do that, and California's population stabilization led the charge on reporting on it. Edison Power in California got rid of, I believe it was 400 Americans and replaced them with foreign workers. And meanwhile, we hear the BS, and you'll hear it tomorrow on the programs and on Sunday. You'll hear it, and I don't care what network you listen to. You'll hear it, and what are they going to say? Oh, we need to import foreign workers because Americans are incapable of doing the job. How about the thousands of Americans that for years were doing the job and just got fired? Why did they get fired? Isn't that evidence that we have the Americans to do the job? It's a lie. And the lie is being told by the CEOs of these companies. And then you look at the people on TV repeating the lies as though it's the truth. And the average American watches these talk show people, watches these so-called anchors, and they like them, and some of them are very likable people, and I've been on some of these programs, and they say, well, if so-and-so says it, it must be true. It's not true. It's not true. There is barely a shortage, and if there is a specific shortage, fine. And then, of course, the other side says things like, what, you wouldn't have wanted Albert Einstein to come to America? You wouldn't have wanted Elon Musk to come to America? And for those of you not familiar, Musk is the guy that started PayPal, and then he started Tesla car company, the electric car company, and he's also the guy that started SpaceX. And they're actually delivering cargo to the space station. I want them to come here. But that's not what we're talking about. You have Ted Cruz wanting hundreds of thousands of H-1B visa holders, and you have Rand Paul saying that he wants no limit. No limit. See, that's what the problem is. It's about displacing American workers. So now you've got a situation where all these people are pushing for these kiosks to zip people through the airport, and don't you think that the people doing the planning overseas, our enemies, the terrorists, don't you think they're looking at those kiosks and they're going to try to recruit some guy who came in maybe when he was 18 or 19 or 20 years old in 2009, and now here we are, 6 years later, the guy has become radicalized, but he's made that entry since 2008, so this guy doesn't have to see an immigration inspector at all. All he does is go to the kiosk. And if there's a slight variation in the way his name is spelled or the date of birth is reversed, because in Europe, if you're born on April 1st, April Fool's Day, it's 1-4. In the United States, it's 4-1. That could be enough to throw these systems off. So understand what's happening. An inspector might look at the guy and say, you know, this guy looks really nervous. And I've done that. I can't tell you how many times during the 4 years I served as an inspector. So you take him out to secondary, and if need be, you're entitled to strip search him under the law, because when you make an entry into a country, you cross an international border, you're subjected to a thorough search like that, and you find all kinds of evidence. So what I'd like to know is, in those places where they've put in the kiosks, what has happened to the number of people that are being referred for secondary inspections? And what has happened to the overall number of aliens denied entry, because it would appear that they are coming for purposes other than what they're claiming? And I'm willing to make a bet. I'm willing to make a bet that you're going to find that in the places where there are kiosks instead of the inspectors, that the numbers of referral to secondary and the numbers of aliens turned around will have diminished significantly. That's what I'm willing to bet. So what I'm trying to do is to convince members of Congress to have the General Accountability Office conduct a study about just that point, so that we have an idea about whether or not we are compromising national security so that we can zip people right on through. You know, we look at TSA, and here's another beauty. TSA is also under the Department of Homeland Surrender. So on my way to Montana, I noticed that on my ticket it said pre-cleared. TSA. I get there, and sure enough, TSA says to me, oh, Mr. Cutler, you don't have to take your shoes off. You can leave your jacket on. I said, really? He said, oh, yeah, not a problem. I said, okay, cool. So I was very happy. I left my shoes on, left my coat on, didn't have to take my computer out of my bag. I just zipped on through. I put the bag down on the thing, and it all goes through the X-ray machine, and away I go, happy as a clam, onto the airplane, and, you know, 6 hours later, whatever, I landed in Montana. By the way, if you want to see heaven on earth, go to Montana, go to Glacier National Park, take a drive as I did, or I was driven, around what they call Flathead Lake. Unbelievable. It was hard to believe it was real and that I wasn't watching some hologram. It was just flawless. Beauty beyond anything I've ever seen anywhere. The snow-capped mountains in the background, this beautiful, almost mirror-like lake, spectacular. But on the way home, I go in, and I look, and my ticket doesn't have anything special on it. So the next thing I know, I'm taking off the shoes, I'm taking off my jacket. So I went over to one of the TSA folks, and I started chatting with them. I said, you know, I'm a retired federal agent, and so on and so forth. And we had this conversation. And I said, you know, I'm really curious, but on my way to Montana, my ticket was stamped pre-cleared. do you guys at TSA do that? They said, oh, no, no, that's done by the airline at their discretion. I said, how do they determine it? He says, I really don't know, but it's not a big deal. I said, well, why do they do it? He says, well, I guess they're hoping that if you like it so much, you'll spend $99 a year so that you can always be treated that way. I said, wait a minute, let me understand this. TSA did not make the decision that I'm supposed to be pre-cleared and not be really scrutinized. That's done by the airline, and apparently it's being done for what purpose? So they can get an extra $99 because I fly frequently? What in the world does that have to do with airline safety, folks? Either you believe that people need to be searched or you don't. I mean, if you're a terrorist organization, obviously the trick is make a dozen flights in the span of a year, behave yourself, do everything by the numbers, be docile and smiling and accommodating, and God knows you too can be on that list of pre-cleared. Then you buy into pre-cleared because you now have traveled frequently, and away you go. The lunacy that we are witnessing is something that is incomparable in history. I have never seen stupidity on the galactic scale the way we're witnessing it today. It's astonishing. It's absolutely astonishing. And, you know, time and again we do this. We're talking about giving people citizenship even though we have no real way of knowing who in the world they are if they've run the border. Hillary Clinton is criticizing the Republicans because they don't want to give these people citizenship. How about someone standing up and saying we have a legal immigration system and the government itself should not be making a mockery of the legal system? How's that for unique thought? How's that for an interesting way to do business? Why on earth would you not want to make certain that we don't make mistakes that get people killed? I mean, that's really what we're looking for here, folks. That's exactly what we're looking for. We just want some common sense. You can't have the government running the legal immigration system and giving a wink and a blink and a nod to the illegal system, if you will. Because once you start to do that, you have anarchy. You have anarchy. You know, I wrote an article for Progressives for Immigration Reform. And what I wrote about, let me see if I can find this for you. Yes, here it is. My article for Progressives for Immigration Reform really and truly went into this in great detail. And the article that I wrote was given the name The Immigration Factor, Naturalized Citizen Added to the FBI's Most Wanted Terrorist List. What's so astonishing about this story is we have a guy from Somalia who becomes a naturalized citizen. He's driving a cab in Washington, D.C. for years, and he goes over to fight on the side of the terrorists. And now the FBI says this guy is a terrorist. He's on the most wanted list of like 31 or so people. We're not talking about thousands of names. This guy's pretty high up in the pecking order if he's on this list of 31 names. And what does the FBI say? We're going to give you a cash reward if you could tell us where he is, or if he comes back, or if he has contact with anybody, because the FBI's concern is that this naturalized citizen, we gave him citizenship, may well have been using his opportunities as a cab driver to learn the intricacies of our nation's capital so that either he could come back or he could train people overseas and have them come back and carry out attacks against the critical infrastructure in Washington, D.C. Absolutely no integrity to the process under which we give citizenship to aliens. And there's Hillary Clinton saying, let's make everybody a citizen. Let's make everybody a citizen. Never mind that these DACA cases, no face-to-face interview, no field investigation. Don't worry about it. What's more important, saving American lives, preserving national security, or bringing in voters, cheap labor, new students, and commerce? Obviously, to these politicians, Americans who die are collateral damage. Isn't that unfortunate? Oh, well. You see, that's what galls me. There was an oath of office that these people took that was very similar to the oath that I took as an immigration agent, as a federal agent, very similar to what the military takes. The difference is the agents took that oath seriously. The difference is our men and women in uniform take that oath seriously. Hillary sure as hell didn't. Mr. Obama sure as hell did not. Nor did Mr. Boehner. Nor did any of these people who think it's appropriate to ignore the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission. They are trying out for the MVP award from Al-Qaeda, from ISIS. I am convinced of it. They could not do more to aid, abet, encourage, induce these people to come here and clean our clock. And by the way, where aliens are concerned, if you are guilty of aiding, abetting, inducing, encouraging, harboring, and shielding, and harboring and shielding certainly relates to this government giving official ID to people who can't even prove who the hell they are. It certainly applies to sanctuary cities like New York, sanctuary states like California and New York State and Illinois and all these other wacky cities and states. Those charges, aiding, abetting, harboring, shielding, encouraging, inducing, are felonies under our immigration laws. I mean, I'm not holding my breath. I don't think the Department of Justice is about to prosecute anybody for doing that. I'm sure if you did it as a civilian, the agents would come knocking on your door. But that's because you're just a citizen. And after all, citizens are expendable these days. We just dodged a bullet. There was an amendment added to the funding bill for the military that if it had passed, would have enabled illegal aliens to join our armed forces and then be eligible for citizenship. There's a law, and I know the law quite well. I made a bunch of arrests under this for the violation of the law. It is a felony for an illegal alien to possess a firearm or ammunition. Felony. It used to be a 2-year felony, then it became a 5-year felony, now it's a 10-year felony. And I've arrested a bunch of drug dealers and so forth who were here illegally who had firearms. So we're going to take illegal aliens and give them guns and ammunition, training, access to military bases, and we can't prove who the hell they are. But meanwhile, because of the concerns about lone wolf gunmen and terrorists, they're ratcheting up security at our military bases because God knows we don't want those bases attacked. But we're willing to put people into the military whose true identities can't be readily verified. And there's an even better bill that almost made it. And by the way, that was knocked down, finally, today. There was another amendment that got that knocked down earlier, but you're not going to believe this one. The two characters in Congress who wanted this bill enacted would have allowed illegal aliens to be eligible to attend our military academies. You know, Annapolis, West Point, the Air Force Academy, the Coast Guard Academy. Could you imagine? Why on earth would you want to allow illegal aliens, these DACA, these dreamers, to be able to get an all-expense-paid, world-class education at our military installations? We just had a DACA kid, so-called, commit a heinous multiple homicide. We are not screening them, folks. No interview, no field investigation. Hundreds of thousands. And I've read to you what the 9/11 Commission warned about. This isn't xenophobia. This is common sense. We have a legal system. Our leaders should be demanding that nobody come into the United States except through the legal system, and that legal system needs to have integrity to protect us. You know, imagine if you're on the Jersey Turnpike and you're zipping along or you're going to the Turnpike, and then you see a sign up there. And what does the sign say? Well, today it has two choices, Easy Pass, cash. If you have one of those Easy Pass transponders, you can go through at 55 miles an hour. It's very convenient. And on you go, and you get a bill in the mail. If you don't have a transponder, then you have to pay. That's cool. Imagine now if the government established a third lane that said free, no speed limit. Free, no speed limit. Who in their right mind would then be willing to pay? Why would you go to Easy Pass or cash if you go into that third lane that says free, no speed limit? And that's what these people are calling for. They are supposed to be our leaders. And they're showing nothing but contempt for our own laws that are as fundamental as they come. You know, liberals and conservatives have a battle going on about what role the government is supposed to play. The conservatives don't like the EPA. They don't like the Department of Education. There's a bunch of regulations they'd like to throw out the window. So there's this battle that goes on. And I'm not going to get in the middle of that battle tonight. Maybe some other night we'll have that conversation. But nobody could argue from either political perspective whether or not our military is a legitimate mission for the government, national security. If ever there was a mission that everybody could and should agree on, it's national security. The enforcement of our immigration laws are an adjunct to the military. I want you to think about it. The primary mission of the armed forces of the United States, and I don't care if we're talking about the Coast Guard, the Navy, the Marines, the Air Force, the Army, they have the same mission. Keep America's enemies as far from our shores as possible. If Russian airplanes, for example, were to intrude into American airspace, the Air Force goes up and they escort them out. If we have a ship incursion, the Coast Guard, if the situation is a little too heavy for them to handle, in comes the U.S. Navy. That's what they do. That's what they do. It's the mission of the military. You know, we're fighting them over there, so we have to fight them over here. That's another big lie. We are fighting them here. That's why we have the Patriot Act. That's why you're almost strip searched getting on board an airplane. We're not fighting them over here, my rear end. But nevertheless, the purpose of the military is to keep our enemy as far from us as possible. So tell me, boys and girls, how can the United States military carry out its primary mission, its uncontested and uncontestable primary mission, when we already have millions of foreign nationals from virtually every country on the planet living in almost every town and city, from coast to coast and border to border, and we have no way of knowing who the hell these people are, who they're affiliated with, what their ultimate intentions are? And remember, it only took 19 people on 9/11 to create the devastation that has changed the world. Think about Jokhar Tsarnaev, who got the sentence that, in my view, was entirely appropriate and consistent with the nature of his heinous crime, killing those innocent people, putting that goddamn bomb next to that little boy. I could start to cry. Next to a little 8-year-old kid. All it took with two sociopathic bastards. Two people. Injured hundreds. Destroyed how many lives along the way? We're dealing with millions of people. And our government is aiding, abetting, encouraging, inducing them to come here. And the lies that we're listening to by the journalists, this is good for the economy. Foreign workers, and I don't blame them because I would do the same thing. Foreign workers come to the United States to send more money home. Every year between $125 and $200 billion. The UN used to publish the numbers. They don't anymore because they're all in this together, these globalists. So let's take the low figure, $125 billion. There is something that economists talk about, and it's called the multiplier effect. For those of you not familiar with it, I'll explain it real briefly. The multiplier effect was what was behind the so-called economic stimulus package. The idea is that if you take a dollar and put it into the economy, it will generate more money. They used to say $5 per dollar, a 1-to-5 ratio. Now, economists have lowered this a bit, and they say it's $3. So every dollar you put into the economy generates $3 in commerce. The way it works is you go to work and you're a shoe salesman. So you sell this woman a pair of shoes, and at the end of the day you get your commission check, and then you go to your barber and you take part of that money and you get a haircut. The barber takes part of the money that he's paid at the end of the week and he buys some lumber so he can build a new deck for the back of his house. The guy that sells him the lumber gets the money and he takes his family on a vacation. That's the idea of the multiplier effect. You put money into the economy, and it generates more money by people spending. When money is removed from the economy, it's the reverse of the economic stimulus package. Every dollar, then, that goes out of the economy really shrinks the economy by a factor of 3. So let's take the lowest possible figure, and there's lots more money besides the visible money, these remittances, money wired. But 125 billion times 3 is 425, I think I'm right. No, I'm wrong. It's $375 billion. I needed my abacus here. So $325 billion is the equivalent impact on our national debt. Last time I checked, the national debt is growing roughly $500 billion a year. So that $375 billion is bringing you pretty close to the growth of the national debt. And again, the number is probably closer to $200 billion, which, if that were the case, we're talking $600 billion, which is now more than the national debt. And that's before we look at Americans losing their jobs and going from middle-class tax-paying consumers to people losing their homes to foreclosure and falling below the poverty line and depending on the safety social network or economic network programs to protect people who lose their ability to support themselves, which costs us even more money. Then there's the cost to education, and then there's the cost of crime because, you know, roughly a third of or 30% of federal inmates are aliens who shouldn't be here. So you look at all the costs. Our entire national debt could be reversed and shrinking if we dealt with immigration effectively. But you never hear that from the folks on TV. You're going to hear them talking about it. We need comprehensive reform. It will grow the economy. Folks, it doesn't make any sense. It will displace more American workers. It will drive down wages. It will reduce the tax base because as people make less, they pay less in taxes. And so it goes. We're in the middle of a downward spiral, and the people that are out there yakking away aren't even telling you the truth. This is sheer nonsense. This is not the way it works. The best thing we could do for the economy is to do what was what happened during the Depression. Stop bringing in foreign workers till Americans are all working. You know, if everybody was really working, if that 5.4% unemployment rate was actually the rate, then we could have the conversation, should we bring in more workers? Then it would make sense. But those numbers are a lie. So we're making major decisions with faulty information. What could possibly go wrong? But the biggest problem we have, and if you're listening to my program, and I thank you for listening, is that the average American doesn't know. And even those who are starting to get it aren't doing enough to get their voices heard. It is so critically important that we not roll over and play dead and act stupid. We're better than that. I was on with my friend Bobby Gunther Walsh's program today. You know, every other Friday I'm on his show. He broadcasts from Pennsylvania. And we got into this conversation on the air this morning. I always love being on a show. It's 9 o'clock. If you're able to, WAEB. Not next Friday, but 2 weeks from today, I'll be on with him at 9 a.m. And I said, you know, look, Bobby, everyone is running around saying, well, you know, I'm only one person. What can I do? So I want you to think about something. This is your thoughts for the weekend. Please give this consideration. And by the way, if you're finding this interesting, if, you know, podcast or this program is available. Share it with your friends. Share it with your neighbors. You know, work with me to contribute to this bucket brigade of truth, as I've come to call it. But everyone says, well, I'm just one person. What can I do? I want to leave you with a thought this evening. When you think about the American Revolution, how many names come to mind? Can you name more than a dozen people off the top of your head? When you think of World War I, how many names? World War II, how many names? For good or ill, you know? Whether it was General Patton, certainly on the good guy column, God bless that guy's memory, or that piece of trash Hitler. I mean, we're just talking about a few names. See, people can make all the difference in the world. You limit yourself when you say, what can I do as one person? On 9/11, when everything happened, I was so angry because I had testified before Congress previously. And it was about the dangers of immigration and national security because of the 93 attacks. I testified May 20th, 97. And when those ashes landed on us, so my wife and I stood outside our home, and the ashes rained down on us, or snowed down on us, it looked like a soft snowfall. I can't begin to tell you what that was like. My neighbors were out screaming and crying because many of my neighbors worked at the Trade Center. Many of them did not come home. And my wife looked at me and she said, "This reminds me so much of the scene of at the crematoria at Schindler's List. Do you think there are human remains in the ashes?" I said, "Of course there are." And in the days that followed, because I had already testified before Congress, because I did know some people on Capitol Hill, the media started to call me, whether it was 60 Minutes. I had a number of conversations with Steve Croft's producer. Mike Wallace called me. I had a number of conversations with Mike. I wish I had met him in person. I never had that privilege. But we did have about a half dozen phone conversations, and he called me as often as I called him. And at one of those calls, we stayed on the phone for over an hour and a half. He was a big fan of what I was trying to do. Because I made my mind up on 9/11 that small as my voice was, I was going to get it heard. I was going to make certain that I would do everything in my power to educate as many of my fellow Americans and as many of our so-called leaders about the role that the failures of the immigration system had played in those attacks of 9/11. And I've been doing that ever since. And I've been told that millions of people now get to read the stuff I write, listen to me on whether it's this radio program or other radio shows, TV. I do speaking events around the country. And I'm not looking to dislocate my shoulder and say, how great am I? That's not at all the case. I just feel that I owe this country a debt of gratitude. It provided safe haven for my mother, who would have died in the Holocaust, along with her mother and other family members, had she not been able to get here. Because America opened its doors to my mom, I had the opportunity to be born. My children had the opportunity to be born. My granddaughter had the opportunity to be born. So I owe this country everything. I'm just repaying a debt to this country, to the men and women of the military that put their lives on the line, to law enforcement officers who go in harm's way. I've lost friends in law enforcement along the way. This is about being American. Not about being a Democrat, not about being a Republican, not about being a Jew or a Christian, black or white. It's about being an American. It's about standing up for ourselves. You know, we need a stand your ground law in America today, and I'm not talking about firearms. It's not at all what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about, stand your ground when people start the accusations because you dare speak your mind. You have the absolute positive, without any equivocation, right, absolute right to speak your mind. First Amendment, period. It's time that we grew some hair or some other features, spine perhaps, whatever. I'm not being sexist about this because the women, God bless the women, they can sometimes have a bigger mouth than the men can. But we've all got to speak up and stand our ground and get back to being Americans. Get back to working as a team. Team America. Team America. And when the politicians lie, we need to confront them. When you go to town hall meetings, you need to videotape them. Those cell phones are fabulous. And if you have a politician who won't attend a town hall meeting, I don't care who they are, what party, or what they claim, get rid of them because they're insubordinate. I had some great bosses, and I had some bosses who I was sorry to have to see in the morning. But no matter who my boss was, if he or she said to me, 0800 hours, we're having a meeting, and you better be here, could you imagine my telling my boss, I'm going to sleep in tomorrow? Well, that is what politicians do when they refuse to have a town hall meeting. We are their employer, and we should be calling them by their first name. Bring them in for a landing. Give them a taste of reality. Let's stop having the tail wag the dog. And we can do that, because we're Americans. We can stand up for ourselves because we are Americans. Americans don't get pushed around. Don't let it happen to you. Get involved. You know, I always like to make the point at the end of my programs that democracy is not a spectator sport. And there's a reason that I say it, because indeed, democracy is not a spectator sport. You cannot be worthy of living in a democratic republic if you're not willing to shoulder the responsibilities that go with it. Part of the responsibilities is to become well-informed and to make the politicians accountable. for far too long, those politicians have been running roughshod all over us. When Nancy Pelosi could talk about health care and say, you're not going to know what's in this bill till after it's voted on. Would you buy a refrigerator that way? Would you buy a car? Would you buy a toaster oven that way? Yeah, it's in this bag. We're not going to show it to you, but, you know, and we're not even going to tell you how much it costs, but we'll deliver it, and then we'll tell you what you owe us. What are you willing to purchase under those terms? You know, I was speaking to some people this week, and I was thinking back to when the auto executives were called to Washington, when GM needed to get bailed out, when Chrysler needed to get bailed out. And I don't know if you folks remember, but Nancy Pelosi was all over them like white on rice. And these guys, oh, my God, it was pitiful. It was sad. It was sad. They sat there at that hearing looking so contrite. They looked like little schoolboys who were called to the principal's office because they were caught without their homework, or maybe they were caught cheating or talking in class. I don't know. But, boy, they looked pathetic. They're supposed to be leaders, but they're not leaders. They were pathetic. They were wimps. And she chewed them out for flying to Washington in their corporate jets. It was one of the most bizarre things I'd ever seen. But there she was, hammering them. And there they were. I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. I won't do it again. I got into the airplane by accident. I shouldn't have been. I mean, it was funny, but sad, sick. They were leaders. They look like whipped little children. I'll tell you, if I was one of those auto execs, I think I would have handled Miss Pelosi a lot differently. I think I would have explained to Pelosi that a corporate jet is an efficiency tool. You know, I do a lot of flying, and I can't tell you how many times I've been stuck at an airport because of inclement weather somewhere in the United States. So now you're sitting at a terminal, cooling your heels, waiting for a flight to land so you can get on it to go where you're going. And I've literally killed hour after hour that way. Now imagine you're a corporate executive, a CEO, making mega bucks, and instead of being productive, even if you go into that first class lounge, the Admiral Lounge, the Super Duper Lounge, the Whoopie Doo Lounge, it's not the same thing. You can't really do the same kind of work that way. So this is dead time. And if these executives have to travel frequently, and I suspect they do, that's really lost productivity. So the corporate jet makes perfect sense. So pointed it out to her at the hearing that jet enables me to be far more productive. And then I would have turned to Ms. Pelosi, and I would have said to Pelosi, you know what, Madam Pelosi, I know most men would have a problem admitting this, but I'm going to tell you what. Where that jet is concerned, where jets are concerned, yours is definitely bigger than mine. Something for you to think about. Imagine Nancy Pelosi reacting to that. Imagine the headlines that you would have heard the next day. Look, it's time that we started to put our elected representatives with. Thank you so much for joining me, folks. Remember, democracy is not a spectator sport, and I look forward to seeing you again, same time next week, right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Good night, everybody. Have a great weekend.